I'm Kevin Kelly. The show is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And on the show today, we have two members of the Arcadia Chamber Players who are giving their fall concert this Friday evening at 7 o'clock in Urbana. And then in the later portion of the show, we'll have live in our studio the Jack Quartet. We'll tell you why they are called that, but they are a string quartet specializing in new music. And I think that need not scare you away from sticking around till 12:30, because they've got some really fun and extremely fascinating music that they've brought along with them. And one of their members, as a matter of fact, born and raised in Urbana-Champaign, I think Champaign, and may be familiar to some folks who've lived here for quite some time. That's the show today. Stay tuned. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Thank you.
heard the final movement of a trio by Beethoven for two oboes and English horn, played by Mark Weiger and Andrea Gullickson, the oboists. S. Blake Duncan was the English horn player, and they were members of a double reed consort that called itself Wizards! Exclamation point. Of course, the pun was a visual one because the exclamation point, as well as the I, the lowercase I in Wizards, are both upside down, either right side up or upside down oboe and bassoon reeds, which you probably need to have seen to even know what sense that makes. But the reason I played that music here on Live and Local this morning is that it's one of the pieces that is going to be on the program by the Arcadia Chamber Players Friday night at 7 o'clock at First Mennonite Church in Urbana. And we have two of their founding members with us now. They're doing a version that is not quite the one that you just heard. Apparently a number of arrangements exist for that. The folks who are here are pianist Deborah Suter and flutist Mary Leathers Chapman. Some people still know you simply by Mary Leathers.
I know.
Is that why you always keep the name there in programs?
I started out keeping it just so people would know who I was, because Mary Chapman wouldn't have meant anything, but...
But now it does.
Now it does, but some people still know me as Mary Leathers.
And so there you are.
So...
You've got all bases covered.
That's right.
Well, that was Mary speaking, obviously. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. And they're first up on the show. Later on, we have the Jack Quartet live in our studio. And so stick around for that if you can. So this trio of Beethoven, originally for those instruments we just heard, but you're doing it for three different instruments.
Yes, we are doing it for flute, clarinet, and cello. Clarinet, Marina Antoline, a member of Arcadia, and one of our guests, Amy Flores, on cello.
So I'm always amazed that you find all of these arrangements. We talk about this whenever you're on, that you find either arrangements for other instruments of pieces like we just heard, or really remarkably different arrangements from the original, such as one we're going to hear shortly of Debussy. And you have little catalogs or something that these show up in, or...
Yes, catalogs. I receive flyers in the mail. We look in the internet.
We explore the library, the music library at the university.
I actually bought this particular arrangement of the Beethoven at some point, and this is the first time we've performed it. I also have it arranged for three flutes, and that's how I knew of the piece. And then I found this arrangement for flute, clarinet, and bassoon quite a few years ago.
Of the same piece?
Of the same piece, yes.
So why did you decide to do the cello one instead of the bassoon one?
Because we were having a cellist on the program.
She was already going to be on.
She was already going to be on the program, and so that made sense.
Yeah, there you go. And she, as you mentioned, Amy Flores, the guest violinist, is Rachel Jacqueline. You always have guests on the show because I imagine it's hard to put together a whole program for the unusual combination of flute, clarinet, and piano.
Right. There's not a lot arranged for that combination. And it's just more interesting to have other pieces with other instruments.
Well, it makes you a very collaborative ensemble, of course. Where does the name come from? Why Arcadia Chamber Players?
Arcadia was based on a Greek mythology. It's where the gods or the goddesses made music, a pasture-like area. So we got the country scene in there as well as the music.
And the fact that it's women.
That's right.
Because you're always women, right? Have you ever had a male infiltrate your concerts?
We have not, although we're not opposed to it.
So that hasn't been deliberate?
No, it just hasn't happened.
That just happened that way. Although men are allowed to attend the concerts.
By all means.
Yeah, okay.
Well, we do try to highlight women composers also.
Which you're doing twice on this concert.
That's right.
One is actually a local composer, Elaine Fine, who is a violinist and violist. Actually, she was on the show, I don't know, a few weeks ago when she was doing a recital. She lives in Charleston. What's the piece of hers that you're doing?
It is called Postcards, and she wrote it for our group.
Oh, really?
Flute, clarinet, when we were a quartet, flute, clarinet, cello, and piano. And I think she told me that she had originally started writing this for another combination of instruments, and
got stuck.
It got stuck. It didn't pan out. And then she decided, we talked to her about writing something for our group. And so she took this piece and pulled it out and arranged it for our four instruments.
So it began life not necessarily intended for anybody in particular, just something she had in mind to do.
I think so.
Well, I guess that happens with writers, whether it's music or any other kind, where you start to do something and it doesn't work. So you stick it in a drawer and then it's given an opportunity. I mean, you even hear about people like Mozart will do this, where they had all these notes and then they, particularly if they had a hurry-up commission, you know, right. Said, well, we need something in 2 days. Oh, okay. Better dig something out that I already wrote and then try to modify it. What's the piece like? Are you able to describe it at all?
Elaine sent me some information about it, and she said, I like to think of postcards as small, picturesque, mini tome poems about places that are not real.
Oh, okay.
And there's five of these postcards. The first one is called Wish You Were Here, and she said she thinks of it kind of as a prologue to the rest of the piece. But she said this was an excuse to write a sentimental piece.
But she doesn't describe the imaginary place.
No.
So that's just left up to the listener.
Right.
To either divine
Wish
or guess.
Wish you were here.
Yeah, okay.
Wherever I am.
All right.
And the second movement is a variations on a mid-morning stroll. And she says of this one, it is a reflection on the mundane pleasure of something familiar, like a path, a place, perhaps near home, but with changing light and changing weather. And the third movement is called Night Spot in a Modal Village. And she said she originally wrote the main theme of this movement as dance music for a play about Maud Allan. Have you heard of Maud Allan?
I feel like I have, but I'm just amused by, I mean, I'm just imagining Elaine sitting here because I'd really like to ask her questions about this, where she dreams this stuff up. No, who's Maud Allan?
Well, she was a pianist turned actress, also a dancer, choreographer, and she lived, let's see, I have her date somewhere. She lived from 1873 to 1956.
Okay, so that may not be an obscure reference to some. And then a couple of more?
Yes, there's two more movements. The next one, which is kind of a neat movement, is called Cave Walk. And the piano plays constant quarter notes throughout, which is just kind of...
So that's the walking.
That's the walking. Okay. And it's kind of a spooky, slow, spooky, eerie feeling throughout, you know, as if you were in a cave, not knowing what's coming up next.
I was in Southern Illinois over the summer and had the opportunity to go into a cave, and I didn't take it for exactly that reason. I got to the mouth of the cave and thought, I don't think I'm a cave person. I just turned around.
You're either a cave person or you're not.
It would be very spooky. Okay, right. And the last one?
And then the last one she calls Epilogue, and she said, it is a setting of a melody I found in a 1942 book called Songs of Zion. And she likes to think of it as kind of a journey home over the hills and the valleys of the previous four postcards.
Well, for no other reason, it sounds like an interesting piece to hear, just to hear how she imagined all these things that she describes quite wonderfully.
Right.
So that's five postcards for flute, clarinet, cello, and piano. That's one of four pieces that are going to be in a concert by the Arcadia Chamber Players Friday night at 7 o'clock in Urbana. Two of their number are on my show today, Deborah Suter's pianist, and we've been hearing from Mary Leathers Chapman, the flutist. Let's hear a little sample of one of your performances. I think this is from your most recent concert, last spring,
yes.
Is that right? And you did an arrangement of the Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun of Debussy, which, of course, is for rather large and very colorful orchestra, and some arranger, do you know who it is offhand?
No.
Took this thing and reduced it to three instruments, really quite wonderfully. Piano, actually for your core group, flute, clarinet, and piano.
Right.
So here is a little bit of that in a performance by three members of the Arcadia. The absent member, or one who's not with us right now, is clarinetist Marina Antoline. And you're hearing it on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. Oh, I hope you agree, a very effective arrangement of a remarkably colorful piece. It was very famous at the time that it was composed, and it is still famous for historical reasons and just because it's gorgeous anyway. It's the Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun of Claude Debussy for a large orchestra, but here played by the three core members of the Arcadia Chamber Players. Flutist is Mary Leathers Chapman, clarinetist Marina Antoline, and the pianist Deborah Suter. And Mary and Deb are on the show with me in our studio right now here on Live and Local on FM 90.9 to talk about their concert tomorrow night in Urbana. It's at First Mennonite Church. I stumble on that every time. I want to say Methodist. First Mennonite Church at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. It's the corner of Lincoln and Springfield in Urbana. And you have a couple of special guests with you, cellist Amy Flores, violinist Rachel Jacklin. How do you go about identifying guests, deciding? I mean, there's a lot of good performers in the area.
There are. Part of it is what we are looking for in a particular program. We really wanted to have the violin and cello this program. So Amy has actually played with us before, and she knew Rachel and recommended her for the violinist.
Yeah, I haven't encountered Rachel so far.
Wonderful violinist.
Good. Well, that's very good. What is she joining you for?
She's joining us for two movements by Schubert. We're doing two separate movements. One is Sonatensatz in B flat. It's a very, very early work. I read that he composed this right after he was forced to leave the boys' choir because his voice changed. So it's one of his earliest works. And then an adagio. That's one of his later works, a beautiful adagio, or sometimes it's called nocturne.
We'll hear that towards the end of our conversation here before we move to our next segment of the show. So she's just on the one piece, and then you're doing one piece for your core group, a flute, clarinet, and piano, and, by the other woman on the program.
Right. This is a fun piece by Libby Larson. It's called Barn Dances. And she said that she took the names of some country dances and then let her imagination roam and did some interesting things with them. The first one is called Forward Six and Fall Back Eight. She describes it as a hoedown jig. You'll actually hear a lot of open fifths, like as if the strings are tuning up. And she sort of took the name and she did quite a bit with six notes ascending and eight notes descending for the forward six and fall back eight. The second movement is called Divide the Ring, and she chose to use two different contrasting styles for this one. One is sort of a country ballad, and the other is honky-tonk, and she put them together in very close proximity, so it's a fun piece. Then she has a dreamlike waltz, and then the last one is called Rattlesnake Twist, which she describes as a jazz-driven tarantella.
I love these descriptions here. And do they seem to be accurate?
Oh, very much so. It's a really fun piece, yes.
Yeah, you've done, I think you do a remarkable job of programming these concerts. And I was able to attend the last one, and it was really a privilege to be there. And it was a fun program from beginning to end. And it lets you all be virtuosic and in many ways. But also just the way you work so closely together, is so tight ensemble, is really good. Congratulations on your development here. This is what, how many years for Arcadia in one
Arcadia
form or another?
Arcadia has actually been in existence about 11 or 12 years. 12 or 13 years. I'm going by how old my daughter was. Sylvia Lou was with us, and we used to have our little ones toddling around. And, of course, now Amy and Rachel bring their little ones, and they're toddling around. So it's been quite a while. It's been about 13 years that we've been in existence. It was about 6 years ago that Mary and Marina joined us, and then it was the combination of flute, clarinet, cello, and piano. And now we're just flute, clarinet, and piano with various guests.
Yeah, so you're doing what, generally two concerts a year, two, three?
Right, a fall concert at the Mennonite Church and a spring concert at my home.
Yeah, which is a delightful place to hear concerts. That's where I heard the last one, and we'll have you here, of course, before that one comes up. So we won't even attempt a preview. Do you even know what the program is at this point, or you're working on that?
Yes, we're doing a Schumann piano quintet.
Oh, really? Oh, that's a wonderful piece. Yeah. So, well, I think I'm going to revise slightly what I thought we were going to do, because I'm watching the clock here, and it's amazing how fast the time goes on this program. So we'll end with one of those quirky, fun pieces from your last concert. This is your performance. But I want to say thanks again to Mary Leathers Chapman, who is the flutist with the Arcadia Chamber Players. Deborah Suter is the pianist. Two of the core members, along with their absent one, who is clarinetist Marina Antoline. She is teaching school right now.
And Kevin, thank you for having us. And we did want to offer a pair of tickets.
Oh, yes, of course.
To the first person that leaves a message on my answering machine. It's 384-0568. So a free pair of tickets.
Yeah, so you just have to call, and whoever is first there, what's the number again?
384-0568.
Very good. Well, thanks again for joining. And their concert is tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the First Mennonite Church in Urbana, corner of Lincoln and Springfield. And you can reserve tickets at that same phone number,
I presume. You can get tickets at the door.
Or at the door. Okay. Thanks for joining us on Live and Local.
Thank you.
The spring waltzes, I think they're called. Or is this just a collection
just
of waltzes?
Just a collection of waltzes.
By Dmitri Shostakovich, which he in turn stole from himself from other dance pieces, I think. And this is for flute, clarinet, and piano, the three core members of Arcadia Chamber Players, heard here on Live and Local. That was music by Dmitri Shostakovich, one of his waltzes, this for flute, clarinet, and piano, and played by three members of the Arcadia Chamber Players, who are giving their concert tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. at the First Mennonite Church in Urbana. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Support for the show comes in part from Northwest Rehabilitation and Preservation Society with Decatur's 19th Heritage and Holly Home Tour, featuring homes and films and movies on Friday, November 27th from 4 to 8 and Saturday from noon to 6. Tickets at the Starting Point, St. Peter's AME Church, 510 South Church Street, at local merchants, or by calling 424-9147. Next up on our show, we have with us the Jack Quartet, which is has a very simple and ever so clever explanation for how they get their name. It's spelled with capital letters, J-A-C-K, and it stands for the first names of their members, who are violist John Pickford Richards, violinist Ari Streisfeld, did I say it right?
Close enough.
Close enough, all right, you can correct me. Violinist Christopher Otto and cellist Kevin McFarland. And they were here, they've been in residence at the University of Illinois this week giving a number of presentations, workshops, coachings, and concerts. I was at their concert Tuesday night at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts and really quite fascinated with the performance, which was wonderful, of some really interesting music, which we're going to sample on the show for you. And then they're playing tonight as part of the Martirano Award concert, which is also at the Krannert Center, and I believe that starts at 7:30, although I can't actually find the piece of paper in which I thought I brought that information in. So, and I should say also that one of their four members was, in fact, born and raised here in Champaign-Urbana, and knew Chris years ago for quite a long time, Chris Otto, born in
Champaign.
In Champaign, and lived in Champaign, son of John and Rosalie Otto. And I met Chris when he was in fifth grade. I remember at the music building, at the Smith Music Hall, when I had started to conduct the Central Illinois Youth Orchestra. And you were one of, the, I think, 9 or 11 middle school kids who was in the orchestra at the time. And he stayed in it for the next 7 years, became the concertmaster, and went on to meet these guys at the Eastman School of Music. That's where you all met, right?
That's correct.
That's the story.
Yeah, and so that's the story, and you're sticking to it, right? What drew you together when you were there? I mean, there's lots of people at Eastman. Why you four, and how did you end up doing what you're doing?
Well, we were all really interested in contemporary music, and there was a group of people there that always played a lot of contemporary music, and we played together in different combinations, but it was really a tour of Mexico that, not a tour, but we played in Morelia as part of a new music group called OSEA, and the four of us were selected to go down there, and we played some music together that we really enjoyed, and eventually that led to us playing more concerts together and becoming Jack.
Becoming Jack. I asked you this question, Chris, after the concert the other day, but what happens if one of your members leaves? What are you going to call yourselves?
We have a contingency plan.
Yeah. Which is?
We all have other musicians with the same first initial that play our instruments that we think could take our place if necessary.
It's contemporary music specialists.
We're also contemporary music specialists. And so there is a second Jack Quartet out there that doesn't entirely know they exist, but if necessary, they could exist.
So you actually know these people, or you're just hoping you'll discover them by the time anybody
decides? No, we actually know these people.
You do?
Yes. When we get frustrated with each other, we threaten to call them.
Yeah.
We won't ask their names.
Yes.
At this point. How do you choose your music? Because I thought your program the other day was remarkably varied and incredibly interesting.
It's very interesting. The contemporary music, kind of the spectrum of contemporary music is very broad, and there's a lot of different kinds of music out there that we could play. I think contemporary music a lot of times gets a bad name or a bad rap in that it's this one kind of music, when actually there's very, very different kinds out there. And so we try to present that on our programs to show that there's this vast spectrum of contemporary music and lots of different sounds and interesting ideas that composers are writing today.
And that was Ari Streisfeld speaking. Did I say it better that time?
It's Ari, but it's okay.
Didn't I say that the first time? Oh, well, okay.
It's close enough.
Apparently not. All right. Well, I like to do things right on this show. So that was Ari. But the first concert, the first piece that was on your concert Tuesday was actually an extremely old piece.
That's true. I've been very much inspired by the music of Guillaume de Machaut, a medieval composer.
Born in 1300,
that's correct. I've recently kind of been studying how he notated his music and studying how to translate that to modern-day notation. And so I realized that his music, some of his music was written for four voices and could work really well as a string quartet. We have a kind of a running project of playing transcriptions of early music, because a lot of early music translates really nicely into our programs, and that a lot of composers now are looking back at those composers, at early music composers, and are really inspired by their music. So it kind of goes together with the music we play and creates some really interesting contrasts. So.
But it also, in a way, has some very modern elements to it. Often there's a certain element of dissonance associated with contemporary music, well, at least avant-garde music, because there's contemporary music that isn't remotely dissonant. And there's a lot of that in Machaut's music.
This is true, yes. He worked with a lot of very interesting dissonances, and when he was writing this music, there weren't all these rules that eventually became codified through the Baroque and classical era into the Romantic era, and so he was writing with a different set of ideas and different set of rules, and music kind of went in a different direction after him, but now it's, in a certain sense, coming back towards that, towards where it started.
Is that what you brought to do first?
Yes.
Today? So these are the Jack Quartet, string quartet, and some music of Guillaume de Machaut, arranged by Ari Streisfeld, I believe.
That's true.
And heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was one of three pieces that Ari Streisfeld has arranged by Guillaume de Machaut for the Jack Quartet, who just performed for you here on Live and Local. I'm actually glad you chose that particular one because it has that particular sound effect, which I want you to explain and maybe demonstrate a little, because I'm guessing that some listeners might have thought there was something wrong with their radio at that point because it sounds like, ooh, the sound just thinned out, and or else they just wondered, what on earth are they doing? So what on earth were you doing there?
Well, so the movement that we played is a ballade, and so it's repeated the same by different verses is repeated several times. So I decided, as a quartet, since we don't have different words to say, I'd like to just highlight the different sounds a string quartet can make, especially a modern quartet. So in the second time we played it through, I added all sorts of timbral shifts. So the first time you heard it was more. So it was kind of the normal sound a violin makes, sans vibrato, of course. And then the second time around, I added several different techniques playing closer to the bridge, which makes a sound like this. And I also added a few times playing closer to the fingerboard, so it sounds more like this. And then, of course, there are times when we're shifting between the two. So we have these shifts from very different timbres going on throughout the second reiteration of the melody.
There was at least one of the pieces on your concert Tuesday night, and I'm now forgetting whether it was the Xenakis piece or the Elliot Sharp piece, where you sort of exploit that to an extreme degree, where you're just going up and up and up and down the string sort of wildly. It made an incredible effect.
Yeah, that was the Elliot Sharp piece, and... Yeah, he basically, there's one chord that we're changing in kind of an improvisatory way between extremely sul ponticello toward the bridge and extremely close to the on the fingerboard, close to the fingers.
Yeah, and well, in that case, yeah, you said close to the fingers, not just close to the fingerboard. It was way up almost towards the top of the violin, which is really.
Yeah.
You want to sort of demonstrate that thing there? And it sounds sort of odd, you know, just one person doing it in front of a microphone, but when all four players were doing it in a concert hall, it was even different sounding than that, and the sound projected remarkably well, too. You know, I'm looking at your violin there, and it's got all kinds of hacks out of the side of it. Does that happen to come from any of the techniques that you guys use in your performances?
Well, not necessarily.
Or did your dog get your violin?
No. It's gotten some wear and tear over the years from contemporary music, not necessarily Elliot Sharp, but other pieces, Lachenmann and things that, you know, sometimes the finger slips off and, you know.
But you are asked, when you do, a lot of these newer composers ask you to do some things on your instrument that some people would just refuse to do. And obviously you don't. you wouldn't be able to do this stuff.
I think when executed correctly, I think by and large most of these techniques would not hurt the instrument. It's when you know, say, are supposed to hit the string with the tension screw of the violin, of the bow, and say, you know, miss and hit the instrument that these marks might occur.
So it's not a failing on the part of the composer asking you to do something unreasonable. It's a technical problem.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
In the case of the player. Which actually does raise a question. You know, the quote-unquote normal string quartet player has certain technical things that they've got to master. You've got to master those technical problems of fingers and bow, as well as all these unusual techniques that nobody else even encounters. Is that something that you relish, or is it just incidental to your playing the kind of music that you like? Or
I think it's a really fascinating experience because it's sometimes almost like learning a new instrument. The particular techniques that we use in various pieces can be very refined and explored to the extent that, you know, traditional techniques we've been perfecting for centuries, but, you know, as musicians in general, but these other techniques still, there's so much to be explored and so much potential in them. That's, you know, something we're definitely interested in.
Well, you have with you the pieces from Tuesday night's concert by Elliot Sharp. Is that what you have next, ready? Mm-hmm. And that had some really different technical things, not only different techniques, but also some different implements with which you are going to play. Are we going to hear something from towards the beginning, or?
We chose an excerpt towards the end, actually, okay. that highlights pretty much all the different elements, different playing elements that we use in the piece.
Well, before you even start, I'd like you to just explain to the radio audience a little bit what I didn't really know until after the concert, and that is, what are these things that you are using on your instruments?
Well,
there are going to make some really different sounds.
We use three different bows in this piece, the normal bow that you just heard us play using in the mesh show. And then we have a bow, we call it the spring bow, and it's literally just a spring. Elliot gets these by taking apart clip-on lamps. He takes apart the clip and takes the spring out.
It looks just like the springs that we have on our microphones in our studios, as a matter of fact.
Sure. you can get these at the hardware store. And it makes this kind of sound. And it sounds like we're grinding our strings to dust, but actually doesn't. We haven't really. We all feel that it hasn't really hurt our strings that badly. We like the sound enough that we don't mind.
That badly, yeah.
Yes. The other bow that we have is essentially a metal ball chain attached to a wooden dowel by duct tape, and that sounds something like this.
So that's a piece of chain that's on everybody's key ring.
Yes.
Or on a pull chain for a light bulb.
That's true.
And it's
that's
just exactly. sort of dangling there, and you're
drawing it across the strings.
Across. Yes. Yeah.
We think this makes it, especially when all four of us are playing it, makes a really beautiful sound.
Yeah, well, I'd have to agree. In the Great Hall at Cranard, it has mm-hmm. adds some nice resonance to it. Mm-hmm. Well, here's an excerpt from Elliot Sharp's piece called The Boreal. Does that Is that worth trying to explain? It's a rather long explanation, probably.
It just refers to the concept of the north in general, toward the polar cap of the Earth, and also, I guess, references the aurora borealis, the northern lights.
Okay.
I think also the amount of colors that Elliot brings out in this piece through his exploration of sound kind of references the colors of the aurora borealis.
All right, so it's the Jack Quartet performing here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. Was that the end of the end?
Nope.
That was just a pause. I was trying to remember from the other night that I had this sensation that I didn't have the other night, just listening to that last segment there of being chased by a swarm of bees and wasps at the same time. And that was one of those, the effects that you were hearing there were some of the sounds that that Chris, I think, demonstrated earlier when you play close to the fingerboard and then to different places and then, of course, changing strings now and then. That was a movement, a portion of a work by Elliot Sharp called The Boreal, played by the Jack String Quartet here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And, you know, one of the person I was sitting next to at the concert, I'm not sure why he came, except that he tends to go to many, many classical concerts, but he seemed alarmed when somebody suggested that there might be, that this was going to be very modern sounding music, which he didn't seem to have an idea of in advance. And he said, "Is it going to be dissonant?" And with a certain amount of fear in his eyes. And also, Chris, after the concert, you said something to me that that I thought was really, very interesting. The last time you were at the University of Illinois was, what, a year or two ago?
A year and a half.
And similar situation. You gave some performances and workshops. And somebody talked to you afterwards and said they really had to leave midway through the concert because they just couldn't listen anymore.
Yeah.
And they came to this concert, and they had a very different feeling, and I think partly you suggested it might have been the choice of pieces, that you maybe had that in mind when you chose the program. So it leads me to a question, which is, does it bother you guys that a lot of people just don't want to hear music that you have to offer?
Well, I think we're coming to realize that, you know, different audiences like different music, but I think audiences generally react to music that we're the enthusiasm and passion that we put into it. And I think the more we've played this music, even difficult contemporary dissonant music, I think we've gotten good reactions from people just from the way we present it.
Well, and I'm guessing, anybody else have?
I think it's one of our goals is to change people's minds about contemporary music. And through presenting as much variety as possible, we feel like there's something in the vast spectrum of contemporary music for everyone, something there that anybody can appreciate. So, yeah, it's a matter of presentation and context and trying to draw connections, but also trying to dispel some of the myths about contemporary music. For instance, that all contemporary music is dissonant. The entire spectrum from complete consonance and tonality to the most dissonant music is present. The next excerpt we have from Zach Browning's piece, a composer at the U of I, uses a lot of harmonies that borrow ideas from rock music and James Brown and are very tonal in nature, and we think very accessible, but at the same time has enough, you know, grit and fun, you know, stuff that we like to do in it that is something for everyone.
And the way it's put together is through these short sections that are mixed and matched in a particular way that leads to a larger cohesion despite all the differences in styles within it.
I should add that the concert goer from Tuesday night, who was afraid of the dissonance, commented after the first half. He said, "You know, I would like to hear both those pieces again." So, and that was right after the Yannis Xenakis piece, which was probably the most challenging to listen to. Yeah. At least I found it to be. Well, we have this time always goes fast, as I said earlier in the show, and it has done so again. So we have just a few minutes to get in a little bit of the Zach Browning piece that closed the program. This was written for you guys.
Yes. Right? So was Elliot Sharp's quartet.
Oh, was it? I was going to ask about that. Okay, so here is some portion of this string quartet by Zach Browning, the Jack Quartet on Live and Local. To tell you, that was perfectly timed because we have about 2 minutes left on the show, and I was about to try to catch your eye and say, okay, you got to stop now. It's sort of, you know, sometimes sacrilegious sort of to play little excerpts from pieces, but that was nonetheless an excerpt from the string quartet of Zach Browning, written for the folks who just played it for you, the Jack Quartet. And they are, and this is how they got their name, John Pickford Richards, the violist, Ari Streisfeld, the violinist, Christopher Otto, the other violinist, and Kevin McFarlane, the cellist, J-A-C-K, Jack. And they played in the Krannert Center Tuesday night in Urbana. They're going to be playing tonight at the Krannert Center, part of the Martirano Awards concert. That is also at 7:30, and you can call the box office there for information, 333-6280. That's in the 217 area. And if you'd like more information on the Jack Quartet, it is jackquartet.com?
Yes.
That's correct.
J-A-C-K-Quartet.com. I really appreciate your coming on the show today.
It's great to be here.
Thank you.
And have a great performance tonight.
Thank you very much.
And Chris, it's great to see you again.
Great to see you too, Kevin.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Weather forecast and news headlines in just a moment.